Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia dealers of Ireland. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia are with you all the way.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Stephanie Walsh is a retired teacher who specialised in relationships and sexuality education, and she wrote a piece in yesterday's Irish Times. Now, the headline, Stephanie, good afternoon and Happy New Year to you.
Hello, Joe. Happy New Year.
And many more of them. I don't know whether you had any hand, Dr. Barton, the headline, Good Work of Religious and Aiding Single Mothers Now Largely Forgotten.
But that I didn't have any. It was Patrick McGarry put that heading on.
Okay, but it is a fair reflection of what you wrote, as only Patsy, it was a very fair journalist, would do. But I'm just wondering, Stephanie, were you a little bit reticent about putting forward a view which would not be all that common these days? Are commonly articulated publicly, you say in 1971... which is not that long ago, a social worker from the Austin Limerick Social Service asked that my husband and I would consider having a unmarried mother, your quotes, to live in our home as, on a confidential basis. Under such a scheme, over 20 single pregnant girls stroke women lived in our home at various times between 71 and 84. And you mentioned the work of Ally, which is a family placement service founded by Fergal O'Connor, an extraordinarily incredible priest, one of the first in the Catholic community to advocate for a more compassionate attitude towards women with children born outside wedlock. So that is your thesis, Stephanie, that the good work of religious in aiding single mothers is now largely forgotten.
Well, that is my experience, Joe.
Okay.
1971, you say, isn't that long ago, but it is a generation and a half ago.
Yeah.
And, I mean, your researcher, Fergus, mentioned that he hadn't known that people stayed with families other than mother and baby homes. And it was my sons who had told me after I listened to a Brendan O'Connor interview with two babies in the 1970s and had them adopted that I should write a piece about this, that it's a different world. It was a different world, and that generation really don't know about the pressures that were there then for those women.
Obviously, and you've done it very well in your article in the Irish Times. You've protected everyone's confidentiality. But who were you expecting when you were asked the first time, would you take in a pregnant young woman? Were you surprised by the age, or was it as expected?
No, the social worker told me that she was a 17-year-old girl and that she was a schoolgirl. So I wasn't surprised. And the social workers... And this social worker was a religious sister, as were all the social workers that I worked with from various orders, from the Mercy Order, the Good Shepherds, the Assumption Sisters, the Company of Mary. They were all involved in the work of helping the pregnant single girl when the dice was very much loaded against her.
And how... Where, insofar as you can generalise, but if you want to give anonymous examples, you can. How were the young women themselves when they came? Were they upset, nervous, worried,
panicked? Oh, they were very upset. The particular concern was that it would be confidential. Yeah. Many of them hadn't told the father of the baby about it because they were worried that their reputation would be in tatters. So even the fathers didn't know about it. Now, a few of the fathers, a minority, were kept in contact and were supportive. But mostly it was just the parents or their siblings who helped.
And did the young woman continue going to school, for example, if they were in school?
No.
Did they leave your house? Would they want to leave your house?
They stayed in her house, sort of like an au pair,
know? Okay, yeah.
So they stayed in our house. They helped me with three small kids at the time, and they were sort of like an additional member of the family.
But would they leave? I mean, would they say, can I go down to the shopping centre or can I go and meet my friends in town?
No, no, they didn't want to meet anyone.
Did they not know?
No.
Oh, God. What was that like for you, dealing with young women who were obviously so frightened?
Well, it was a good experience, mostly for us. It varied. You developed a very close friendship with some, with others not so close. Hmm. But it was interesting. I mean, I was at home with three small kids, and it was interesting from the social situation. Mm-hmm. I had come back from the States in 1970, having been there for almost 5 years, and Ireland was already changing fast, and you could listen into their experiences. I mean, it was a time that there was only one RTE television
station.
And, I mean, there were a few rules that you learned that were important to keep, like the television wasn't on all day long.
Okay.
And there were sort of cultural changes with the girls. I mean, some of them said, well, we'd just like to keep it on, but not...
Keep it on, but not, you were breaking up there. And okay, you said they were like an au pair. So if there's, in your case, three children, they were very, very busy.
Yes.
They weren't bored.
No.
And of the 20, Stephanie, young woman that you took in, did any of them leave, say, I don't like it here, or I've changed my mind?
One girl wasn't that happy with us, and I wasn't that happy with her. And so a previous girl who had come from a mother and baby home, Besra, and wasn't happy there, who had come back to stay with us, she suggested that she go to Besra, where she did go and was much happier there because, I mean, she was a young girl. She was only 14. She was happier there with other young women.
And after 20, were they visited by their families or friends?
Oh, mostly they were not friends, I don't think, were involved, but the families were the parents often would come down at a weekend or something.
They'd sit in your living room or...
We'd sort of leave them space to talk separately, you know?
Yeah.
The thing was the confidentiality was so important then. That was, they didn't want any friends knowing about it.
Yeah.
They didn't want us to tell anyone. I mean, if our friends came in, they might disappear, or you might just introduce them by their Christian name. And
how would you explain their presence in your home, if you had to? I don't know.
Well, I suppose after a while, people knew that we were doing this.
Hmm.
But since I did that article, I'm on various WhatsApp groups.
Okay.
And I'm in a book club that has a WhatsApp group.
Okay.
And I discovered that there was another member of that book club who also kept girls in her home. And I never knew that. And I say she didn't know that I did. It was so confidential.
And what reaction have you got generally, Stephanie, since the...
Oh, a very positive generally, although I gather there's a lot of anger on Twitter, but I don't tweet.
Okay, would you read Twitter, obviously?
I don't know, I've been told.
Oh, you've been told, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a lot of anger on Twitter generally. But there is a lot of anger around towards, and it might be articulated much later this month, when the Mother and Baby Home, over 1,000 pages, that report...
I think it's 4,000 pages.
4,000 pages, okay. When that's going to be published.
Yeah.
Because it looks like places like Besra won't come out of it very well.
I imagine so. That's quite true. And a lot of...
And religious orders in general, insofar as you can generalize, might not come out very well either.
Well, you see, there's been a change in the attitude of the general public. I mean, it was a different world then, and the religious were filling the gaps. And the, in my experience, I can only speak from that, they were providing places for these girls to stay. I mean, one of the girls who stayed with us, her mother was dead. She had married sisters living about 20 miles from her, but they wouldn't have dreamt of having her stay with them.
Yeah. Isn't it awful? Just awful thinking of somebody. If we look at all the photographs on New Year's Day of the new babies and the joy.
That's
such a joyous occasion.
Yeah.
You talk about it, the only reason there was confidentiality was because of shame. Which is shocking.
But the shame was really from the secular community. I mean, we were living in the suburb of Limerick then, and a neighbour did say to me, I don't think it's a good idea to be having a girl like that staying with you. Your husband is young, you know. So that was what the neighbours...
How did you respond to that, Stephanie?
...really were saying. They were very suspect. And they thought anyone who was pregnant and was unmarried, they were that sort of girl. What did surprise me about our experience was that there were girls ranging from 14 to in their
30s. Yeah. Did you say when that woman made that horrific point to you? I'd be careful of having a... quotes a woman like that or a girl like that in your house with a young husband?
Well, I obviously disregarded her, but she had spoken that her mother in the 1950s had put a maid who they were living in on the Ennis Road, and her mother had a maid who had had a baby in the attic. And they discovered the baby. So this lady's mother put the maid out with the baby on the street rather than keep her in the house.
My God.
So that was the world that the religious sisters were operating in.
Again, can't generalise. But the stories, we do hear stories of the parish priest, it's always the parish priest, isn't it? Marching up and saying, that girl can't live. It's portrayed in movies as well and dramas.
No, I never heard that. Okay. In fact, a lot of girls referred to me.
Well, I just wonder, I take your point about the religious orders, and as I say, there would be another perspective, not another perspective in the from what we know about what's going to be in the mother and baby home report. But like maybe the church should have been standing up and saying, listen, stop this nonsense, stop this cruelty to young women.
Well, individuals were. I mean, Father Fergal O'Connor, a Dominican priest, founded Ally, which led to Cherish, an organisation set up by single pregnant women, which led on to various women's issues, things like AIM and ADAPT. Like, women's world was very circumscribed at those times. I mean, you couldn't get a loan for a house without... the husband signing
crazy,
for it.
Crazy.
Even people getting public housing, it was to the husband it was rented, not to the wife. So if the husband were drunk or disorderly or beating them, the mother and the children would be out on the streets rather than the men who were doing it.
And after 20 women, do you still have contact with many of them, though life goes on for everybody, so there's...
Yeah, well, I just had a Christmas card from one, and she had her baby in 1975. I would have said to them, I'd love to hear how you're getting on, but I don't expect you to stay in contact. So many of them would have lost contact over the years, or, you know.
Okay. It's an interesting reminder of different times. But still, those.
It isn't to judge the time in the. In the historical context of the times, you know, and this transparency that everybody wants.
And did you find, Stephanie, sorry, just get the day that's in an Nollag na Mar, did you find that the mothers of the children, sorry, of the young women who were staying with you, who were all had that, the thing they had in common was they were pregnant and they didn't want the world to know it. How were the parents, the mothers and the fathers?
Well, very
because
concerned.
Because the mothers and the fathers could have said, no, you're staying with us, you're living with us in our house.
Well, you see, it was
with
very,
our grandchild.
It was very difficult for women to live. They had no money to go on. I mean, if a woman were in a job and were employed, she'd have to get a sympathetic doctor to sign a certificate to say she had pernicious anemia or something, like being pregnant wasn't any reason for being out of work. But they couldn't have worked because what would the neighbours say?
What would the neighbours say, Stephanie? I know. Even when you say it, I know.
Yeah.
Who cares? I know people did, but I'm thinking
of
this pandemic.
Everybody cared.
I know they, but who cares what the neighbours? Hopefully everyone cared for the young women, but who cares what the neighbours say? Maybe I'm coming from the pandemic world perspective, where the important things in life, like our health, our science and our battle against pandemics, rather against each other, takes on a new priority. But that you would think, okay, if someone becomes pregnant, they decide themselves with their family, whatever, depending on their age, what they want to do. But if they decide they want to keep the child, well, that should be an absolute joyous occasion.
It should, but it was traumatic. You know.
Okay. When did you stop, Stephanie? When did you stop doing it?
I stopped doing it in 1984 when the situation had changed. At that stage, people were staying in their jobs, in their community, and and remember when Bernadette Devlin had her child before she was married, and she announced it in a press conference,
Which was great bravery at that stage.
Yeah, it was a fantastic shock. I don't know what year that was, but I suspect it was the late 70s. But by 1984. Was the last time somebody stayed with us, and things improved for those girls and women after that. Oh, you know.
Yeah.
Now I think the transparency versus confidentiality is a key thing in this whole debate. Because people like the people who had the babies, people like myself, who sort of collaborated in the process, and the social workers, they were all bound by this. And then it was like the gold post changed, and now it all has to be about transparency.
Okay, stay with us, Stephanie. I have a break to take, please. 51551, wash hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And I'm talking to Stephanie Walsh, who wrote an article in yesterday's Irish Times. She didn't write the headline, but it's a fair reflection, she says, and anyone reading would agree. It's the good work of religious in aiding single mothers now largely forgotten. I know Stephanie just wants to listen to some of our callers. Mary, your thoughts, please.
I tell you, Joe, I didn't really get all the program. I happened to just switch on, and this has been bugging me a long time. I had my second son 30 years ago.
Okay.
I was in a maternity hospital. It so happens there was another girl after giving birth to her baby. So happens I knew her.
Okay.
Now, it wasn't in, I wish she was in, we were in the same school, but I didn't actually, I never knew she had a child.
Mm-hmm.
She had a child previous. She wasn't married. She put the women, as you women, when they're together round, what had you and as general. And she was asked, was this your first baby?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, this is my second baby. And I did say to her, God, I said, you have given somebody a great gift.
Mm-hmm.
And she had no regrets. The girl was very contented with her decision. That's the impression she gave. And not all mothers have regrets. Now, I'm not generalizing. I really mean there is some people.
So the first, the first baby.
Yes.
What happened that first child? Maybe?
She actually put it up for adoption.
Oh, okay, and you're saying she didn't regret it?
I didn't seem to get that from her.
Okay.
But she, you know, she said I was young and I never knew she had a child.
As you say, it's been bugging you for a long time. What's been bugging you for a long time is the fact that everyone presumes, is it, that women regret giving up their children for adoption?
Yeah, well, I mean, Irish people are very hypocritical, because if a girl gave up her baby, like, they actually frown on it. I mean, it's such a terrible thing to put on somebody. If somebody made that decision of their own free will, now, I'm not talking about girls who were forced or, you know, but if a person made that decision for mm-hmm. that child,
mm-hmm.
but what really bugged me about it was that girl left the little sitting room we were in and the other women lambasted her. Because she gave up, how could she give up her baby?
Mm.
Now, I personally thought it was terrible. And I said, well, I think this was her decision. And I mean, I didn't probably say an awful lot, but I was annoyed. And it still bugs me to this day because, like, people make decisions for themselves.
Okay, so...
And people should not be judging girls who did willingly give up their babies.
Okay, say with us, Mary. Mary's Uncle Kenny, Pat Williams.
Good evening.
What happened in your case, Pat?
Joe, what happened in my case was I was taken by the nuns at 12 hours old from my mother.
Right.
Basically, my mum had me in a public hospital. Okay, she was 28 years old. Yeah. Right. From what I found out in the course of research, was that the nuns basically went around and used unmarried mothers,
mm-hmm.
babies, as stock. And they basically what it was because, say, you wanted a baby with blue eyes, black hair,
mm-hmm.
right? You could go to one of the convents. Besperate was the one.
Why was your mother in Besperate, do you know, Pat?
My mum wasn't in Besborough. My mum had me in a public hospital.
Oh, okay,
in
and how did she end up in Besborough?
They took me from mum, right?
Why?
Because she was single. Because she was single, and that was it. They wanted to sell the baby, and that was it. They had someone looking for a child. So if they had someone looking for a child, they just went along and they just took him. Simple as that. The single mothers had no choice.
And do you know if your mother protested?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, because of the research I've done, right, mm-hmm. I've managed to track down some family members from my other family,
yeah.
right, and they have told me
yeah.
that my mum did not want to give me up, right? In the finish, right, my mum created such trouble over it, right,
mm-hmm.
that she ended up above in Mullingar. She ended up dying on the day after my first birthday. I was born on the 28th of the 11th. She died on the 29th of the 11th. Because she committed suicide, right, she was not entitled to be buried in a marked grave. Right? It's after taking me over 20 years to find where the poor woman was buried.
So at 29 years of age, from just working, 29 years of age, your mother died by suicide the day after your, what would have been a year since she gave birth to you.
Yeah.
And have you found where she's interred?
Yes, I have. Yes,
okay,
I have.
Well done.
I have found exactly where she's in charge. But in actual fact, from talking to other survivors and other people that were in these homes, like, the nuns were doth a law onto themselves. The nuns were doth a law onto themselves. Literally doth a complete and utter law onto themselves.
And what age are you now, Pat, generally?
I am 42 years old.
Okay, so it was 42 years ago.
Yeah, it was 1977.
Yeah, well, it's 1977. A lot of people can remember 1977. Okay, Pat, stay with us. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I'm talking to Stephanie Walsh, who wrote an article in yesterday's Irish Times, Good Work of Religious and Aiding Single Mothers, now largely forgotten. And over a period, Stephanie and her family took in 20 young women who were pregnant, aged between 14 and in their 30s, and they stayed with them until the child was born. You mentioned, one of the things you mentioned, Stephanie, is that the family might not have been able to afford to keep the young women during their confinement, as it's called. But were you paid to feed?
No, I wasn't paid. I didn't pay them. We gave them bed and board, and they often got the allowance that was the sick pay allowance, okay, if they were working. Or, I mean, some of them were abandoned by their families, yeah, and had no one visit them. But mostly the parents were in touch with them. But many of the girls pretended they were in England on a job there. And so they posted their letters to England, where they were posted back.
The letters were brought. Sarah, which is not your real name, which will become obvious. Sarah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you reckon you were in Stephanie's? And
I stayed with Stephanie from September 1981 to January 1982.
Okay.
She was absolutely tremendous lady. And I've lost contact with her, and I'd love to get to.
Well, we'll do that. If Stephanie and yourself are agreeable, we'll exchange your details.
I'd love that.
And Sarah, when was your baby born?
Well, funny story, Joe. Nobody knew where I was. And just as Stephanie has told you about letters going over and back from England,
yeah,
and there was terrible snow in January 1982.
Yeah, yeah.
And in Stephanie's house was surrounded by snow. I was due my baby. I went over. But I had pictures in my head of, oh God, there's going to be a helicopter, have to come and get me, and I'm going to be on the front pages of all the papers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my cover would have been blown. But it didn't happen like that.
Okay, but I know the word confidentiality has been mentioned, but it was secrecy. Sarah,
I was from a Church of Ireland background, Joe.
Yeah.
Shame on your family, etc., etc.
And who was I don't want names, obviously, but who was instrumental in having you go to live with Stephanie?
I went to Cura, I think it was at the time.
Okay, but did your parents push? Did the local cleric?
No, they didn't know. I ran away from home, Joe.
Okay.
And the letters that Stephanie is talking about over and back kept my family happy, thinking I was working in England.
Oh, you ran away. They didn't know where you were.
No.
Okay.
No.
How's your baby? 1982. So
she's a 38-year-old and has two grandchildren.
Oh, well done. Congratulations, Sarah. Congratulations. We'll put you again, if that's an interesting outcome, we'll put the two of you in contact
with each other again. Those stories.
Okay.
Love to.
Good way to finish. Okay, thanks indeed, Stephanie Walsh and Sarah. Not your real name or other callers. Okay, Rebecca Meehan, producer Ray Darcy's next.